You are Locked On Broncos, your daily podcast on the Denver Broncos, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
But this one's for Pat!
That's right, you know what time it is, people. You are Locked On Broncos. It's time to drop some knowledge. I'm Chad Jensen, the publisher of MileHighHuddle.com. And my co-host, who is usually with me, Luke Polglaze. Unfortunately, we couldn't get together on this night. We had a little bit of a schedule mix-up. But we're going to have a guest on tonight, Robert Land of Locked On Texans, to get the latest on the Tony Romo situation, what in the heck happened with Brock Osweiler, and more. But before we get to that, please understand, and you know this by now, but for those of you listening to this show for the first time, we are committed, Luke and I, to bringing you a daily podcast focused entirely on your Denver Broncos at least 5 days a week. And we're not here to just report the news. You can get that anywhere in today's day and age. We're here to give you a deep dive on your favorite team. And what really helps us out is when you retweet the episodes on Twitter, when you share them on Facebook and other social channels, and make sure you're following the show on Twitter. At Locked On Broncos. Just take a second, flip open the phone, flip open the app, find at Locked On Broncos, and click the follow button. And make sure you're checking out the work we're doing over at MileHighHuddle.com. Killer premium Broncos content. And again, it's tailored for the maniacal Broncoholics out there. More deep dive stuff. Our premium members get 10% off on tickets, 10% off on Broncos team merchandise through Fanatics. And also, you want to check out the work that Luke is doing over at Inside the Pylon. They just released their Inside the Pylon draft guide. Google that, find it. For those of you who want to know more about the draft prospects and learn a little bit more about this upcoming draft class, that's your ticket. And don't forget, the home of our show is Audio Boom, but make sure you're also subscribing on iTunes and Stitcher, because we're knee-deep now. We're moving right into the thick of draft season, and you're not going to want to miss a single episode. Now, today's episode is brought to you by Audible, our sponsor. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/LOBroncos. Over 180,000 different titles for you to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And with your free trial, you can listen to a multitude of bestseller titles. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/LOBroncos. Again, that's audibletrial.com/LOBroncos for your free audiobook. Now today, again, pleased to welcome in our guest, Robert Land of Locked On Texans, our brothership, I guess you could say, from across the way that covers the Texans on a daily basis. He's a credentialed journalist for the Houston Texans. Robert, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good. I'm hoping we're just going to have a tug of war. The winner gets Romo. Is that how it works for this deal?
Hey, maybe that's what it's going to have to come down to, but I don't know what we're going to do about Jerry Jones and his son, Stephen Jones.
Yeah. Well, I'm just wondering, like, is Romo pretty liberal? Does he want to maybe be able to have some legal use of some different substances? Might be a reason he would want to leave Texas? Do you think that's going to play into it at all?
Well, hey, we do know he was at the Trump inaugural celebrations in Washington, D.C. There was that photo op with he and Elway. So I would guess, if I had to, that maybe the draw and the marijuana and the liberal slant to some of Denver's culture, the cultural aspects of Denver, might not be as big of a draw to Tony, but who knows? He does have a bad back.
I thought you were going to say, since he likes Trump, that he likes orange stuff. So I don't know if that's where you were going with that.
Hey, it does add up, right? No, we're definitely going to get to some Tony Romo talk, and just, I got a couple things I want to get off the old chest first. And one is, I heard this recently, that Jay Cutler, there might be interest in Houston for Jay Cutler, who, as we know, was recently released from the Bears, former Denver Broncos first round pick back in 2008. Is this a story that holds any water?
Tell me where you're hearing this from, because I haven't heard anything. And you know what? The thing that's interesting with both the Romo and the Cutler stuff is nothing really has come out of Houston camp. I mean, Jason LaConfora he seems to have, or I think it's either him or Ian Rappaport or both guys. They're like, they must be Rick Smith's best friend or something like that. But there's somebody in the Texans camp and that always drops stories over to them with what's going on with the Texans. And I've heard nothing about anything as far as the quarterbacks. Everything that I've heard is from everybody else and conjecture and all that stuff. But the Cutler stuff, yeah, I haven't heard a thing.
Well, you know, honestly, one of the last things I read on that was that the Texans are, quote unquote, not interested in Jay Cutler. But I've been a proponent of the Denver Broncos not necessarily saying no to the idea of at least considering Jay Cutler as a free agent, as a veteran guy who can come in and at least be a failsafe. But why wouldn't he be a good option for Houston? Because, I mean, they're staring down the face of rolling into a 2017 season with Tom Savage as their quarterback. Why wouldn't Jay Cutler make sense for a team like the Texans, who really seem, it's very similar to the Broncos, to be one quarterback away from true contention?
The one thing that I think when I think of Jay Cutler and the Texans not working out real well is Bill O'Brien wants you to take care of the football. You know, he don't want you to throw interceptions, and Jay Cutler that's not his thing. And I talked to Brian Perez with Locked On Bears. We had him on our podcast about Jay Cutler. He was really high on way higher on Jay Cutler than I would have thought from a Bears perspective. You know, he's a guy that he feels like Jay Cutler has not been put in a really good situation the whole time he's been with the Bears, and people have been given a little bit of an unfair picture of him. You know, I don't know. I haven't seen Cutler enough. I haven't focused in on him and got to see him game after game after game. You really don't feel like you know these quarterbacks until you live with them a little bit. It's kind of like a marriage. You know, you don't know what you got until you see them on a real regular basis. So you get real focused. I don't know about you guys, but I just get so focused on my team and what's going on, and you're watching it from that perspective. It's sometimes hard to kind of keep up with every quarterback and every game and what's going on with all of them.
That's true. And you have to wonder, too, I mean, with how badly – I mean, I remember watching, I don't know what it was, 2 years ago maybe, when the Texans were on HBO's Hard Knocks, and getting kind of behind the behind-closed-doors perspective on Bill O'Brien, the coach, and also Bill O'Brien, the man. And honestly, there was – I came away mostly impressed by him, but then – I hear things, and over the last couple of years, especially with the quarterback carousel, really, that has taken place in Houston, and most recently with Brock Osweiler, I have to wonder if he has the personality to jive with any quarterback not named Tom Brady. And specifically, while we're on the horn, we might as well talk about it, because I know Broncos, our listeners, are going to want to know some of the dirt on what went down there. But Brock Osweiler getting shipped off for they gave Cleveland a second round pick and more to get out from under Brock Osweiler's mammoth contract. What? I just don't understand how that deteriorated the relationship. I've heard about shouting matches, possibly physical altercations. Tell us what you know, Robert, about how things went down the toilet between Brock Osweiler and the Houston Texans.
I don't think Texans fans are really disappointed that they gave up the second round pick to get rid of Brock, because they didn't want to see Brock ever again in a Texans uniform. And if that opens up the money to maybe get a Romo, that's fine. If it opens up money for something else, that's okay. Yeah, a second round pick was a high price to pay. Keep in mind, you know, if you're following this in Denver, the Texans lost Boye, and there's going to be some major compensation for that. They might get a second round or a third round pick in the what is it called? That they might get a compensatory pick next year for Boye. So that might have played a part in them being willing to give up that. Also, really under the radar, they got a fourth round pick this year in exchange for a sixth round pick from the Browns. That might not seem like a big deal, but a fourth round pick from the Browns is a very high pick, obviously.
That's true. Yeah.
So that's a pick that they could use to move up in the draft if the quarterback that they're looking for is on the board a little bit later than they think. And the Texans are still going to draft a quarterback. Bob McNair said he's going to draft a quarterback, and the organization will draft a quarterback. So that's going to happen. We could get to that. But as far as the Brock situation, I don't know how much of it was between O'Brien and Brock. I mean, you hear about the shouting matches behind the scenes at times, and it just doesn't seem like it would be in Brock's nature. It seems like that's more of a Bill O'Brien thing. I mean, you saw Bill O'Brien. Everybody remembers this. I think this was on national television where he gets into a yelling match, shouting match on the sidelines with Tom Brady. So
yeah, that's true.
That's not so unusual. And Bill O'Brien isn't the type to keep his emotions bottled up inside him. I mean, we've seen it plenty in the press room and everywhere else. So do I think he can get along with people? I'm sure he can. I mean, you don't have the success that he's had as a coach. You know, he did some things at Penn State. And obviously, if Bill Belichick liked him enough to hire him, then that says something too. But I think with Bill O'Brien and Brock, I just think it came down to the fact that, you know, Brock was not his kind of guy. He didn't take care of the football. He made mistake after mistake on that deal. You know, he'd come to the press conference, you know, after every game and say, you know, well, I just can't do that. But then he would do it again the next week. He would make the same weird turnovers and the weird throws and things like that. So I think it was worth it. And kind of this new school, we call it in Houston, the Daryl Morey way of taking a second round pick and getting out of a contract. And that's what they did. And you know, we I think most Texan fans would tell you they're pretty much on board with it. You're losing either way. You screwed up with the contract and that sort of thing. And I would say from my perspective, people can get upset that they screwed it up with Brock. But I mean, at the time you go, at least they're trying to address the quarterback and they put their chips on the table and they went in on somebody. It just was the wrong guy.
Yeah. And you have to keep in mind, I mean, the money that Brock Osweiler received from Houston, I mean, that you think, oh, they're getting this proven veteran type quarterback. But in many ways, Brock's first season and only season in Houston was really still, he was in his first year as a starter, because in Denver, he started just 7 games. And that was in his entire 4 years after being a second round pick in 2012. And so he starts 7 games. The final game as a starter, he gets benched after 5 turnovers. And granted, many of those, well, at least 2 of those turnovers weren't his fault. But nevertheless, his final game in Denver, he gets benched. Then he goes to Houston, and he's still very much feeling his way and learning the ropes of not only assimilating a new offense, a new culture, all of a sudden the new burden of being the franchise guy in this new city and all that, but he's also, from the sounds of it, having a little bit of a personality conflict with the head coach and the, you know, the offensive mind of the team, which is Bill O'Brien. And it doesn't shock me that Brock's first year wasn't a total success, but they did make the playoffs. And it still was a little bit surprising to me, some of the vitriol coming out of Houston as it relates to Brock, that look, you invested in him, maybe you should have, maybe you're going to rue the decision to move on in the way that you did with Brock, because you still only got a partial view of what this guy is capable of. Maybe he just needed more time.
The problem I think that I saw with Brock was that you didn't see improvement. He was making the same mistakes over and over again. I thought for a second in the middle of the season, oh, he's looking better. There was a stretch where he went maybe 4 games with 2 turnovers, but then he started to do the same thing over and over again. And the things with Brock that you just were going to have to change. His release point was terrible. He was getting balls batted down.
Yeah.
His release was slow. It's very unusual to have a quarterback that size do well in the NFL, because you need to have a quick release. And if you're all arms and legs like that, it normally doesn't work out. There's not a lot of 6'8 quarterbacks that have had success. I mean, I don't know. Ask Dan McGuire. There's a name that old NFL fans remember, Mark McGuire's brother. But, you know, that was a problem with him too. He didn't see the field. He would lock into guys. But the biggest damning thing against him, the biggest knock, if you're a Texans fan, look, Brian Hoyer and Ryan Mallett and golly, Ryan Fitzpatrick, all these guys came through Houston over the last 2 or 3 years, and all of them could get the ball to DeAndre Hopkins, and Brock Osweiler couldn't get it to him.
That's,
I mean, it was
point,
just amazing.
Yeah.
It was just amazing. He couldn't get the ball to DeAndre Hopkins, and he didn't know how to do it. He was throwing lasers at him instead of, you just got to float the ball in there and let DeAndre out-battle his guy. That's who he is. And he would lock into him sometimes. A lot of his interceptions was because he was trying to force it into DeAndre Hopkins. Tom Savage comes in there And boom, 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 you know, DeAndre picks up a quick 8-10 catches against Jacksonville in the second, third, and fourth quarter. And you're like, well, that's no wonder, you know, no wonder we don't like him. This guy comes off the bench and figures out a way to get it to one of the best wide receivers in the NFL, and Brock couldn't do it.
You know, we've heard a lot of smoke signals coming out of Houston, and who knows how much of it is posturing as it relates to the Tony Romo issue, which we'll get to here in just a minute. But the smoke signals are trying to paint the picture that Houston is very much believing in Tom Savage as a legitimate option heading into 2017. And as you mentioned there, it sounds like they're going to take a quarterback at some point in the draft. But tell us how the Texans really believe, or I mean, you're there every day. You're a credentialed journalist with the Houston Texans. Tell us how they really view Tom Savage, and is he a viable candidate to be their starting quarterback day one, no matter what happens with Tony Romo?
Well, I don't know if you ever know with the Texans how they view somebody. Bill O'Brien's pretty close to the vest. Rick Smith doesn't talk to anybody. He doesn't do interviews on the radio. He rarely addresses anything. You get a very generic stuff if you get him in a public press conference, which happens, you know, maybe two or three times a year. It's that rare. He's not out in the open like, you know, some of the other GMs around the NFL, that's for sure. And so it's really difficult to know what's going on with the Houston Texans inside unless something leaks, you know, unless, you know, like I've said before, you hear it from an Ian Rappaport or you hear it, you know, from one of the national guys. So when I look at what they think about Tom Savage, you know, it's really difficult to tell. Tom Savage, his first year, he looked like he didn't know where the center was when he went up to snap the ball. And then this season, he impressed a lot of people, not only in camp, but when he got a chance to go in there in that Jacksonville game, he was fantastic. Now, the thing when people watched him on television against the Bengals and his one national performance and basically one of the two starts that he got is they thought, oh, the guy wasn't that impressive. But I saw a guy that looked like he had handcuffs on him for that entire first half of that Bengals game. They weren't letting him throw the ball. It was every first down, it was run the ball. And that was the Brock Osweiler playbook. And I think they needed to change it around and give the guy a shot to throw the football because, you know, it looked like a night and day difference between him and Brock. He's got a lightning quick release. He's got a great arm. His decision-making skills to me look really good. The only thing that you get concerned about him a little bit is injuries. You know, he might have played earlier in the season because what happened in Green Bay, this was about three or four games before the game that he came in. We're playing the Packers, and all of a sudden before the game, you hear that Brock has some sort of elbow or arm infection or something like that, and he had to miss a couple of games. So we don't know if he might have ended up playing a little bit earlier than he did. He had to come back from that. He also was out the previous season. Now, there's a thought that maybe he should have been put on the injured reserve list that previous season, got hurt in a preseason game. And so they basically say, we're going to put him on injured reserve, have him out for the season. Well, that year was the year that they went through Mallett, they went through Hoyer, but Hoyer got injured and they were playing Brandon Whedon. So maybe Savage comes in there and is able to impress him a little bit. And they would have seen a little bit more of Savage going into the offseason. The Brock thing might have not happened as it did, might not have played out as it did. Right. So, you know, my feeling is that Savage is a very real possibility. You know, I would hope that they liked him for what they saw, because most of us liked him from what we saw. You know, he's not as talkative. He's not as much type A as a lot of quarterbacks that you would be familiar with. He seems like when you get him in a press conference, he talks, but he's not really that loquacious. He's not, he's just not the typical what you would expect, you know, Philip Rivers type A personality. But, you know, I want to see what Tom Savage can do, and I'm afraid to let him go. And he's, by the way, this is his last year under the contract, and they're going to have to make a decision on him after this year.
Well, I know from the Broncos' perspective, and we talked about this on your show, but from the Broncos' perspective, everything we've heard is that, you know, they're kind of in a Mexican standoff, if you will, where the Cowboys, they're holding on to Romo because they want to get something back from him. They want to make a trade. Everything we've heard from the Broncos side is that they are unwilling to give up any form of capital in a trade, whether it's personnel or draft capital. We've also heard through, you know, the major media that that's the case with the Houston Texans. But what have you heard on that front, Robert? How are the Houston Texans viewing this standoff between Jerry Jones, Tony Romo, and the Broncos and the Texans?
Boy, it's all quiet on the Western front here. You know, you don't hear a whole lot. One thing that I find interesting is, you know, Jerry Jones and Tony Romo, they're besties. I mean, from everything we've heard, they love each other. So if Jerry Jones is waiting on a trade from one of these two teams, then that means Tony Romo might not care which one of the two teams he plays on. You know, maybe he doesn't, because he might end up getting similar money if he's let go. Now, maybe he doesn't. Maybe the money isn't there. So, you know, I don't know, but I just find it interesting that Jerry Jones and Tony Romo supposedly are on the same page. And I don't know what you think, but I just find it interesting that, you know, that tells me that Tony Romo would be okay going either place.
Yeah, I mean, I've thought about that. You know, how much of this, everyone's painting Jerry Jones to be this great deal breaker on the do right rule that they agreed to on Wednesday, the day before free agency open, and that this is all basically Jerry Jones reneging on their agreement and their handshake deal, pinky promise, and all this. I've thought about that, but a guy who really seems to be in the know when it comes to what's going on with the Cowboys is Mike Fisher. And he's a guy, you know, he's a radio guy, I believe CBS down in Dallas, but he's also my contemporary with Scout, the Scout NFL Network. He's the publisher of Cowboys HQ. I'm the publisher of Mile High Huddle. And he put out a piece, I can't remember if it was today, Tuesday or if it was Monday. But basically, he went through and kind of presented the case, really, that Tony's being held hostage by the Jones family. And basically, as you said, that these Jerry and Tony, they're like father and son type of relationship, close, very close friends. That handshake, that agreement on Wednesday was very real. But that where things changed had to do with Jerry's son, Stephen Jones, coming in and saying, whoa, whoa, whoa. When Houston basically made that blockbuster trade, that really they felt like maybe they were misjudging the market for Tony Romo, and with that much perceived desperation in the air and the Broncos in the market for a quarterback as well, maybe we'd be better off holding on to him. But if you look at some of the things that's happened, I mean, Tony Romo put out that video with his son, Hawkins, and if you haven't checked it out, go find it, Google that. There's a piece up at Cowboys HQ that talks about this, but the more and more I read into this and talk to people, the more it really does seem that Tony Romo is very much being held hostage by the Jones family and the Dallas Cowboys.
I'm working on that meme right now. You gave me a whole meme I can work on where I got Tony Romo. He's got some tape over his mouth, some rope tied around him. He's got Jerry Jones on one side and his son on the other side. You know,
it puts the lotion in the basket. That would work.
It's funny. I don't know what, you know, it's a typical Cowboys thing. I don't know if Jerry's just playing out this whole thing out because I just think the guy loves being on the front page and he can keep himself on national stories. And Jerry Jones did what today? And what is it? We had breakfast and he whispered over to somebody something. And I don't know. To me, that's just Cowboys being Cowboys, Jerry Jones being Jerry Jones. Hey, in Houston, if you don't know, we hate the Cowboys. And and so, yeah, it's who knows what the thinking is there. There was also, I'm sure you heard these rumors. Oh, Jerry doesn't want to, you know, necessarily send him to Houston because, you know, Houston, what if they get all this publicity now that they got Romo? And what if Romo does something with Houston and it might take away from some of his fan base with Dallas, which you kind of find laughable if you've been in Texas for any length of time, because outside of Houston, it's pretty much Cowboys country everywhere else.
Right.
So I don't know. I don't know if I buy that, but Jerry Jones may buy it. Maybe somebody convinced him of that. I don't know.
Well, I'll leave you with this question, Robert, and I know we talked about this on your show, but I want to play the counterpoint here. In your mind, okay, who knows how long this thing is going to drag out, but do you see this resolving for Tony Romo? Do you think he ends up in Houston? Do you think he ends up in Denver? Because one thing we know for sure, The Cowboys are not going to risk an open competition and a quarterback controversy going into training camp, especially with Tony Romo's salary cap. He's not going to be a Cowboy this year. So as you see it, where does Tony Romo end up, and could that even be retirement?
Bill O'Brien is pretty desperate to do something this season. And Bob McNair seems like he's getting closer to desperation. He's been very loyal. He doesn't fire a whole lot of people. But, you know, Bob McNair is, you know, he's past 80. And Jerry Jones has championships. You know, the Broncos have championships. The Texans won a piece of that. We haven't seen even a conference championship game in Houston with our both of our NFL teams since 1979. So my feeling is that somehow Romo ends up in Houston. I just have a feeling that somehow it happens. I just don't know that Elway, that's his kind of guy. That's his kind of move. Like you know, I've heard you talk about the fact about, you know, you got Paxton Miller, you got those guys, you know, you've got a couple of quarterbacks that you've seen a little bit of. They've got some experience. There's that sort of potential. And the Texans, it just seems like that's the only thing separating them from the Super Bowl is just somebody that's a veteran that knows what he's doing, that can make, you know, even an average quarterback play. And even if you can keep Romo upright, and that's a big if, you can at least get average quarterback play. Even if he slipped a little bit, you're going to get some average quarterback play for him. So I don't know. My feeling is that he ends up in Houston. And before you let me go, though, I got a couple of things I got to ask you about. First of all, I am old school Broncos fan of the Orange Crush uniforms. I miss the Orange Crush uniforms. I still do not like, bordering on hate, their current uniforms. Not hate. They're very generic. It doesn't come off the screen like when you're flipping channels. Oh, that's the Broncos. You know, you got to think, well, am I looking at the Bills? What team am I looking at? And, you know, I miss the Orange Crush. Am I the only one? Are there people in Denver that want to bring back the Orange Crush uniforms? Where are you on the Orange Crush?
I tell you what, for me personally, I don't mind. My favorite modern uniform of the Denver Broncos is when they wear their blue jersey. You know, their helmet stays the same, but the white pants. Now, it's funny you bring that up because I know there are, you know, the classic loyalist to the old uniform and the Orange Crush type uniform. And last year, one of the biggest stories in the offseason for MileHighHuddle.com, believe it or not, was a story that when the NFL first put out the color schemes and the logos and the helmets and all this for the Color Rush uniforms for the Thursday night games, and the Broncos one, I don't know if you caught this, but the Broncos uniform, it was a little bit more of a bright orange that pays a little bit more of an homage, if you will, to the old color scheme. But the helmet, even though it was a darker blue, had the old Denver D on it. And people just seem to really eat that up. And you know what? To be honest with you, I think fans wouldn't be opposed to Denver mixing it up a little bit. You know, it's been, 20 years now, really? Maybe 21 years, 22 years since they changed to this new design. And I think there's a lot of fans who wouldn't be opposed to the Broncos making another type of change, even if that means, you know, splicing back in some of the old look and trying to mix that into more of a modern presentation, if you will. But, you know, at the same time, there's some fans who don't want to mix, you know, screw with the football karma. All three of Denver Super Bowl rings have come under the current, you know, the new designs, if you will. So who knows? With the exception of Super Bowl 48, which they lost, of course, to Seattle, where they wore the orange jersey with their, you know, current color scheme. But that's, who knows? Me personally, I don't mind the current uniforms, but I know there's a lot of people that are pining for that old design.
Yeah, you talk about changing the karma. That I think Rockets fans are still pissed off that right after they win the two championship, they changed from the ketchup and mustard uniforms. First of all, they went to the grossest, ugliest uniforms ever for a few years, and now they're decent. But I think a lot of fans would say if you said bring back the ketchup and mustard, they would be all for that. And I think that the thing is, what I miss about uniforms is, first of all, they used to be uniform. We wasn't a different one every week. I hate that. I hate the Color Rush ones.
Me too.
I'm the grumpy old guy. Get off my lawn. You know, can we go back to that? And the thing is, with a lot of these old school NFL uniforms, like I said, when you flip the channel, you knew what the uniform, you knew what the team was, you knew who it was. I mean, I love the Jets went back to the old school, the Bills went back to the old school, and those are great uniforms, and I miss a lot of that stuff. I got one more story for you that I think Broncos fans will like, because
this is
something that changed. I was there when Broncos history might have changed forever, and you're going, what are you talking about? Well, when I went to college, my first couple of years, I went to Missouri Southern in Joplin, Missouri. And most people don't know Missouri Southern, but unfortunately, people know Joplin for the tornado and all that. Mm. But that's where I went to college, and my first 2 years. And my second year there, I was calling the football games on Missouri Southern television. And there was a player on that team. Now, when I came in my freshman year, this player was from Texarkana, and there's got to be Broncos fans that know where I'm going with this pretty quickly, but he's from Texarkana, and he came in as a quarterback, and they were trying to figure out, they had two quarterbacks. They had a guy named Matt Cook, and they had this guy, and they were like, what do we do? Because both of these guys are really good, and the thing about this quarterback is he was a great athlete. So they said, well, let's move this quarterback. Let's move him to wide receiver. And that changed Broncos history forever, because the guy's name is Rod Smith. And Rod Smith actually lived right next door to me in the on-campus apartments my second year. And, you know, so you'd see Rod Smith around, had no idea, you know, that it was going to end up the way that it did. I mean, we didn't know that he was going to be an NFL guy.
Yeah.
But, we'll never forget that, you know, getting to call Rod Smith's games and seeing him winning Super Bowls with the Broncos was pretty cool.
Very cool story. I appreciate you sharing that. You know, in Denver, I mean, he's a Saint, of course. He's a key component to the back-to-back Super Bowl championships. You know, he's got over 10,000 yards as an undrafted guy. And there's a large contingent in Broncos country that believes he has Hall of Fame merit to his resume as a pro player. He is in the Ring of Fame in Denver, and very much loved and respected in the Mile High City. So we appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah, and you guys got a guy going into the Hall of Fame in Terrell Davis, and I was looking at the numbers. It's very similar to Earl Campbell's case for the Hall of Fame. You know, they both had really short careers, but just remarkable when they were at their peak. I was trying to go through and figure out, you know, does Terrell Davis really deserve to be in there? And comparing him to Earl's numbers, and I think Earl might have had one more really good season, like one more 1,000-plus yard season than Terrell Davis had, but their numbers are very similar.
Yeah.
The one thing I will say, though, is Terrell Davis's offensive line and the way the scheming was, it was a little bit more advantageous for that, and a little bit more advantageous to have a guy named John Elway as your quarterback.
Yeah.
But you know, Earl Campbell, he's still one of my three, four, five favorite running backs, actually favorite NFL players ever to watch. And, you know, speaking of that, I mean, a guy that I never got to see, you know, obviously in person or in live, just have seen him on film, but really sad to hear about Gale Sayers, because Gale Sayers, there was nobody more electric in the open field in NFL history, and his ear that he has dementia. What a great guy he was, the philanthropy. I don't know about you, but you know, from the time I was a kid, I used to watch Brian's Song, one of the great sports movies of all time. And just Sayers is just one of those guys that if you love the NFL, he's a guy that you fall in love with immediately.
Well, and Bronco fans for a long time felt like the Gale Sayers argument was what held Terrell Davis out of the Hall of Fame. But really, if you look at it now that Terrell Davis is getting enshrined, he was the precedent. Gale Sayers was the original precedent of a short career, you know, high impact type player that was enshrined in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So Broncos fans in many ways have a lot as it relates to Terrell Davis. A lot of that credit should go as well to a guy like Gale Sayers, who blazed that trail. But hey, Robert, thanks for joining us, my friend. Everybody make sure you're following him on Twitter at Locked On Texans. Put the show Locked On Texans in your daily rotation. He's a pro. He's very knowledgeable. He knows the team. Credentialed journalist down there in Houston. Robert, thanks again for joining us, my friend.
Thanks so much. It was a lot of fun.
Well, and that's going to do it for today. Make sure you're following the show on Twitter, at Locked On Broncos. Big thanks again to Robert Land for joining us there. Find him on Twitter, at Locked On Texans. Luke, at Luke Polglaze. Myself, at Chad N. Jensen. We do love hearing from you, so hit us up. And make sure you're checking out the killer podcasts on the network, such as, yes, you guessed it, Locked On Texans, but also Locked On NFL Draft, Locked On NFL, great shows. And don't forget to subscribe, y'all. For Luke, I'm Chad. We'll talk to you tomorrow.